let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. In Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well by Linda W. Craighead, Ph.D., you will meet Yip, your inner pup. This adorable puppy loves to eat all the treats he wants, even if they're not so good for him. Well, fortunately, Yip has to train and take care of him to make sure both of you stay healthy. Dr. Craighead is a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in eating disorders. Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well uses simple, child-appropriate language and colorful illustrations to help teach your children valuable eating habits that will last a lifetime. Linda W. Craighead, Ph.D., author of Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well, joins us on This Week in America. Doctor, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I like to talk to parents about what we do.
Well, it's interesting because I mentioned this will teach the children and what they learn will last a lifetime. It's good for the adults, too. I'm reading through this and I'm learning things or reinforcing things that you've learned along the way, maybe shoved out of the way at certain points in time. The book is so well done. Book available at wherever books are sold, and we'll go through that as we progress in the conversation. Why did you decide to write this book? You literally have spent your professional career dealing with eating disorders, weight concerns. Why this particular book? Why did you decide Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well? Why you wanted to write this?
Well, it was really a natural evolution because treating all these adults, it became clear to me that people had these very well-established eating habits and preferences, and we were going to do a lot better if we got the kids earlier in life before they establish some of these bad habits. And what I mean by bad habits is that most of us learn to prefer feeling kind of overfull. We learn to prefer eating sweets or high fatty foods. And we learn to prefer to eat whenever we want to eat instead of trying to follow a regular meal pattern. So it's hard to change those habits when you're older, so the sooner we can get to it, the better.
You know, it's interesting. Most experts will say that babies are born with a well-functioning system to regulate what they eat, what their weight is. What happens? How does that change?
Well, it is true. It's in there, but it just doesn't last very long in this world because, in a way, our bodies are out of date. We have not evolved the way the world has evolved, so our system would work in the Paleolithic environment, but it doesn't work very well now. So babies do pretty good when they're just having milk. They only have one choice and they control the amount. Then when they get to be toddlers and parents introduce other foods, if they start to introduce too high sugar foods, you know, Trix, candy bars, whatever, we innately want those sweet tastes. We can't help that. So the system was devised to help us survive. It was not devised to keep us healthy in a modern food environment. So we've got to help it out.
You know, it's interesting because the highly processed foods that you talk about, those are readily available. You don't have to walk very far. You can walk into a gas station. You can walk into just about any store, and they've got a rack of candy bars and highly processed food there. It's really in our faces all the time, isn't it?
It is, and it's probably the single most serious problem is that we just can't get away from it. And it's tempting because our body was set up to want those foods because in the beginning it was helpful. Sweet foods and berries and colorful foods helped our diet, and high-fat foods gave us a lot more energy. So we want those foods whether we'd like to admit it or not. And here they are all the time, whenever we want them, and they're even cheap. Relative to other pleasures in life, food is kind of highly available, pretty cheap, and unfortunately for parents, they don't have much control over it. Kids, they can control what's in the house, but that's not where kids are getting all their food.
Exactly. The book is Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well. Our guest is the author, Linda W. Craighead, Ph.D. Her website is craigheadbooks.com, and we'll have all that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Book available at Amazon, wherever books are sold. Where does the concept of intuitive eating come in? Does it apply at all to children, and does it apply to adults, do you think?
Well, intuitive eating sort of takes off on that idea that supposedly we have this natural functioning system that will keep us healthy. But in fact, if you really look at it, this system was only devised to keep us surviving. And it will do that very well. But it was not devised to keep us thin and healthy in a fast food world. So intuitive eating to me is a first step that helps people. That's a good step, first step, but it just doesn't go far enough. When I used to try to help my adults get the idea of intuitive eating or mindful eating, like, oh, eat what your body really wants, they really didn't know how to do that. And often in their attempts to do that, they would overeat and then they'd get very frustrated and end up, you know, sort of more upset and mad than they were to start with. So I'm a big fan of intuitive eating and mindful eating, but we've got to add to it. We've got to put more on it. And that's what we do about training people to really learn to use their own body cues, these signals that we have in our body. We carry them around all the time. We have just learned to ignore them because we don't have to rely on them anymore.
Fascinating book, Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well. The author is our guest, Linda W. Craighead, PhD, our guest on the program. You don't use the words mindful eating in the book. It looks like that might be what you're talking about, the picture of the meditating dog at the end. Is that correct? And if so, how do you distinguish between intuitive eating and mindful eating and your approach, which includes appetite monitoring?
Well, we don't use those words, particularly with children, because they don't have very much meaning to a child. They don't really know what that means, and it's not very concrete. So that's why we developed this dog metaphor, because this was something very clear to children. Most of them have pets, or they at least know somebody who has pets, and they're very clear about how you feed a pet, what you do and what you don't do, and why that is the thing to do, and why people are not, you know, managing what their pets eat because they're mad at their pets or they're upset with them. They're trying to keep their pets healthy. They love their pets. So it puts everything, one, in very concrete terms instead of these, you know, kind of abstract terms. And it puts it into an analogy that's very familiar to kids. And that's the way you can get through to kids.
Your approach uses a very specific self-monitoring approach. Talk about that and how that works.
Well, self-monitoring, I'm a clinical psychologist and trained in what's called cognitive behavior therapy. And self-monitoring is really our single most effective technique to help people change their own behavior. Because we can't be around people all the time, every day, telling them what to do.
Yes.
They have to learn to do it themselves. And it turns out that self-monitoring is the way to do that because people are changing behaviors that they want to change. So if they self-monitor those, it gives them that immediate feedback and helps them learn what to do. So with adults, we do very elaborate self-monitoring. I actually have an electronic app that I ask the parents to take a look at. It's free on the Apple Store as well, and it's called the Mindful Eating Coach. And it will tell them how to do self-monitoring, but that was too complicated for kids. So for kids, we use a very shortened version. We call it the hunger scale, and you'll see it in the book. It's a little five item meter, kind of like your gas meter. So either you're very empty or you're very full.
Yes.
And what we're telling the kids is don't get too empty. Don't get really hungry because that doesn't work. And just don't get too full either. So they have a graphic that they can use from the book that does the monitoring for them. But most kids can't really do self-monitoring in the sense that adults do.
Have you found that when we start with young children, children that will be reading Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well, we've got a better chance of success than trying to go to somebody who's 30, 40, 50 years old and change their eating habits? Is it best when we do it at an early age, which you're doing very effectively with your book?
Yes. And in fact, that is the reason why I kind of went towards working with kids, because it was a little frustrating that it was so hard to help adults after they'd been eating that way, you know, 20 years,
yes,
30 years, whatever. It's a very entrenched behavior. So with kids, we didn't know if they would take to it, but we tried this first, like in a summer camp. And it turns out that between the ages of like 8 and 12, the kids were very receptive to the idea. And I think that's kind of the ideal time to start talking to your kids about their hunger and fullness and how they eat, why they want to eat, what they want to eat, but not in a controlling way, in a very positive teaching fashion. And that's what we hope the book will do. So there's a note in there to the parents to tell them sort of how to approach this with their kids, because it's not like a punitive thing. It's supposed to be a kind of parent-child interaction, a set a goal, work on things together, because that's the way you're going to help kids at that age. Now, we do use it with teens and and young adults, because they actually, turns out, they like the analogy as well, but they can do it pretty much on their own. But in that 8 to 12 range, I really need the parents to learn how to do mindful eating themselves, and then use that as their way to model that for their children, and then to help their children learn to do it.
Dr. Craighead's book is very simple, Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well, available at Amazon, wherever books are sold. Her website, craigheadbooks.com, and we've got that on the video for YouTube, and we'll have it on our website as well, so you can get that information. Where did you get the idea to use a dog? You were trying, I'm sure, to figure a way to get this into the hands of children, make it something that they could relate to, but how did you choose a dog?
Well, I actually chose it because of our own pet. I didn't have a pet dog growing up, but we got a pet for our children when they were about 8 or 9. And I could see the way the pet ate, and it was just real different from trying to teach a human how to eat. It was clear that I had to maintain some control, but on the other hand, my kids could really see that there was a good reason why we didn't give the dog Coca-Cola. We didn't give the dog, chocolate candy bars.
Yes.
So they could really make sense out of that. They could understand it better seeing it happen with the dog. Plus, with the dog, they could see the dog begged for food all the time. Some dogs don't, but ours definitely did, and most do. And they could see that we didn't give it a treat every time it begged. And that wasn't because we were upset or mad at the dog, or we didn't want him to have treats. It was because we knew that wasn't healthy for him. And the most important thing was they could see that the dog didn't really care. Sure, it would eat a treat anytime we would give him one, but he would be just as happy if they would go take him and play with him and pet him. And so it made the point really clear that you don't have to eat every time you want to eat, and that there are lots of other fun things that will take your mind off food, and you'll be just as happy, and in turn, you'll be a lot healthier.
You know, there are some parents that say, I can control what my child eats. I set limits on what my child eats. Does that work?
Well, it helps in if they do that in a reasonable fashion.
Yes.
If they're too rigid about it and too restrictive, they will just teach the child to sneak, because the
Yes.
child will actually want sweet foods. And so if they're forbidden at all completely, and the parents are too controlling about it, they will just learn to be sneakier about it. They'll get them when they're at their friend's house, they'll get them at school. And then when the older they get, they'll sort of be more rebellious and just find the food when they can. So you don't want to set the kid up for being sort of annoyed and angry and rebellious and then trying to get the food on their own.
How important is it to teach each person to learn to manage their own hunger feelings? And I say that for a child, I say that for an adult as well.
Well, adults can really understand that, because they know they totally have access to food whenever
Well,
and how
yes.
much they want. We don't control what adults eat. So if the person doesn't learn to control it themselves, then they're just going to follow their natural instinct, which is to eat whatever they want whenever they want. I call it the Princess Prunella strategy, because there was a kid's book my kids had, and there was a princess, and she wanted what she wanted, and she wanted it now. And that's the way most grown-ups operate. So if you think about that with kids, kids are going to operate that way too. So we do have to teach them that that's one way to do it, but that's not the way to be healthiest and happiest.
With us on the program is Dr. Linda W. Craighead. The book that she's written, we're talking about, is Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well. Book available Amazon wherever books are sold, proaislepublishing.com, all of the places, including our website, craigheadbooks.com. And again, all this information is on our website. Why do you think it's even harder for parents to set limits around food than other things that children beg for? It seems like food is something that it's difficult for us to handle.
Right. And, you know, I'm very empathic about that because I have raised four children, and it's not a priority in the moment. You're not really yourself thinking about the child's long-term health and weight when they're asking for an extra cookie. So you have to be very aware yourself of why it's important for you to do it. And it's also makes you feel bad. You just hate to deny the kid something that seems so harmless as an extra cookie or having Coke. So it puts the parents in a kind of difficult situation that they don't want to deny the kid positive things. They don't want to make the kid mad. They don't want to be a lot of tension at the dinner table or arguments about who gets dessert and who can have more. And sometimes there are kids in the family that are already pretty thin or don't eat very much, and other kids who want to eat a lot. So there's a lot of comparison. Why can't he have this? Why can't she? Why does she get to do that? So parents do have a tricky time in the family. And food just doesn't seem to be one of those things that it's often worth arguing about. They've got a lot of other things they have to manage their kids' behavior.
Yes.
So it's very hard, but persistence, you know, pays off, and it doesn't have to be perfect. Parents are not going to be perfect in controlling their kid. There's going to be a day when they're busy, the kid is screaming, and they're just going to say, okay, fine, have it. And that's okay, because it doesn't have to be perfect. It's a long-term process of gradually getting the child to see that they'll feel better and that they are happier, and they can be happy without just having whatever they want whenever they want it.
Is that a problem we all face when we're trying to make behavioral changes, that we strive for perfection? If we do something and we feel a failure, we fail, I let ourselves down, and maybe at that point we go ahead and finish the whole bag of chips because we've failed, we've eaten some. Is that a problem? Perfection sometimes get in the way of making positive changes.
Yes, actually, our impatience, too.
Oh, yes.
It's not only we want it to be perfect, we want it to be done immediately. And that's just not the way behavior changes. So that's partly why people go to psychologists and other kinds of personal trainers and counselors, because they need someone to keep reminding them that, no, it's not going to happen overnight. You're going to have to repeat it, and it's not going to be perfect. And that's perfectly all right, that's the way life is. And one of the things that I tell people is, like, if it works even 50% of the time, that's great. That's so much better than none of the time. So, yes, definitely perfectionism and trying to giving up too soon, saying, like, oh, yeah, this, I tried that, it's not working for me. Well, maybe you tried it 2 or 3 days, or maybe a week, maybe even 2 weeks. But it is something that you have to be patient with and keep doing over the long run. And ultimately, you will find that you feel better.
How do you think parents can use your book? The book is Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well, to help their children learn to make healthier choices. How can parents use this book to achieve that goal?
It depends a little bit on the child's age. For young children, I encourage parents, you know, even with 4, 5, 6-year-olds, to read it with them. It's a picture book. It's set up as a picture book, so it's just a fun book. I know lots of my friends' kids, really, it's one of their favorite reading books. So you're not trying to change anything about their behavior. You're just getting them to hear the words and get the idea. Then about 8 to 10 is when you want to try to read the book carefully with the kid and try to talk to them and say, well, what do you think that means? So there's a lot of interaction with the 8 to 10-year-olds. With a little bit older, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, I say just give them the book and tell them, I found this interesting. I'm trying to do some of these things. Why don't you read this and let's talk about it? Tell me what you think about it. So you put them more in charge. And then, of course, we even use it with adults, in which case we're the ones that are encouraging them to try these techniques and to use the book. But with kids, sort of make it depending on the kid's age and how receptive the kid is.
Time is going by quickly. I want to take a couple minutes here at the end. You talk about three tools that parents can teach their child. Can you briefly describe these? Because these are crucial to success.
Right. We try and make it really simple. Just three things to remember. One is the hunger meter. That's the little self-monitoring scale pared down for children, and it's right on the cover of the book. And it just tells the kid, you know, think about, are you hungry and how full you are, and try to avoid the extremes on the scale. Then we have something called the worth it scale, which is really like, you know, a scale that you would weigh like gold or other, you know, produce on. And when they're trying to decide what to eat, we ask them to weigh them, you know, think about, can I have an apple and a cookie instead of three cookies? That's the sort of decision making we try to help them do. That's what we call it. What's worth it? Sometimes treats are worth it, but not too many treats and not real big treats. And then the third one is what we call the stomach stop sign. So we actually have them think about a stop sign, a red stop sign in their stomach, and say, you're going to depend on your stomach to tell you when to stop eating. You don't stop eating because, oh, the food doesn't taste good anymore, or, you know, you don't want any more. Most of the time you want more. So you can't really trust your head. You have to eat from your stomach. In fact, with adults, I will say very clearly, look, this is eating from the neck down. You can't trust your head, meaning what you want and don't want, but you can trust your stomach. You can trust your stomach to tell you when it's hungry and it needs some food, and you can trust your stomach to say, that's enough, and if you eat any more, you're actually going to feel uncomfortably full, and you're probably not going to be very happy with yourself afterwards. So that's what we try to get them to teach the kids, to use just those three things.
For kids and for adults as well. Very simple to remember, yeah. And sometimes that will come in handy. The stop sign in particular will come in handy for us adults as well. What surprised you most about reactions to the Yip book? You've had extremely positive reviews. You're teaching, you've got people in classes, and you engage with so many parents as well as children. What surprised you about the reactions?
The most surprising thing to me was that the young adults, teens, and parents actually liked the book as well, and sometimes even better than the children, because I wrote it and it looks like a children's book, but it kind of has these tongue-in-cheek cartoon illustrations that a wonderful illustrator developed for me. So it doesn't feel like it's talking down to them. So I was surprised that parents and older people liked it as well as they did. And that turned out to be good, because it made them more willing to sit down with the kid and work with the concepts.
Part of the significance of the package, of the success of the package, is the pictures you had mentioned, pictures and the illustrations. Any particular favorite? You sort of chuckle when you're talking about some of the pictures that you have in the book. Any favorites in the book that maybe adults will get a kick out of as well?
Yes, I really do. I am so grateful to this illustrator, because I think they are just marvelous. But my two favorites are the one with a little puppy who's begging for food and looking up with his big eyes, you know, the way that kids and dogs,
yes,
and all of us beg for food. And it says, you don't have to give a puppy a treat every time it begs. And the other one is a dog dressed up in a, like a cow costume, with a refrigerator on it that says no grazing. And the illustration is for, Yip is not a cow. Yip does not need to graze all day. Because that's the other way you can get around your stomach, is if you just eat a little bit all day long, you may end up eating way too much, but you won't really be all that full. So particularly with adults, grazing is a serious problem. And they often teach that to their children, that, oh, you just kind of grab something every, yes, time you pass by the kitchen. And that's one of the habits that is really hard to break. So please do not teach that to your children.
There is a topic for another program, grazing. We hear so much about that. And so many people are saying, I really don't do meals anymore. I just graze. And you're right. That happens basically If you're awake 8 hours, 16 hours of grazing during the course of the day takes its toll after a while. The time has gone by so quickly. The book is so well done, Training Your Inner Pup to Eat Well. Our guest is Linda W. Craighead. That's C-R-A-I-G-H-E-A-D. Her website, craigheadbooks.com. It's been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we can do this again. It's been a pleasure. I loved having a chance to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate it very much.
It's been our pleasure to have with us on the program Dr. Linda Craighead, book available at her website, craigheadbooks.com, and information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.